Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to 3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
यह कार्यक्रम आपको 3CR कम्युनिटी रेडियो फिट्सरॉय विक्टोरिया प्रस्तुत करती है। ये जिस समीप स्थित है वह कुलिन राष्ट्र एवं वुरुंजरी, बुनरोंग, वाथरोंग, तोंगरोंग और जाजावुरुंग लोगों की समी है। हम उनके बुजुर्गों और संस्कृति को सलाम करते हैं। Welcome to Queering the Air on 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM. My name is Arjun, and today I'll be presenting the Indian episode of the four-part series We Weren't Born Yesterday, Exploring Queer Heritage. During this episode, we'll hear from seven queer-identifying Indians and Australians of Indian origin living in Victoria. I asked them about their family lives, their background, their experiences of coming out, their relationships, and their thoughts on navigating culture and sexuality. In recent years in India, there's been a tremendous change in social consciousness. Alongside continuing legal and social discrimination, there has been robust political activism and queer rights journalism. For Indian migrants around the world and their children, this cultural backdrop remains an ever-present reality that continues to shape our lives. Amongst migrants, the same contradictions between acceptance and rejection, recognition and non-recognition, courage and fear, strength and weakness play themselves out. If we are indeed witnessing a generational shift in attitudes to sexuality, we are the generation in which the important conversations and important changes are taking place. Stay with us for the next hour as we hear some of the experiences of the queer Indian diaspora here in Australia.
To begin from maybe the beginning, I think that I certainly didn't have the terminology to explain what my identity was when I understood my identity. So I feel like I came to a recognition quite early, probably pre, 11 years old, quite a lot earlier than that, I think, but just didn't have the language and didn't realize that it was actually a, if you might use the word, phenomenon or thing that you could call or label. Mm. So I stumbled across queer terminology and descriptors of identity much later in life, and was surprised to think that was, something that needed to be separately identified, because that was my life experience and I didn't think otherwise. And I think this is quite different to a lot of friends I have, and particularly my partner, who comes from a Catholic background, where he had encountered the terminology before potentially identity, discovering one's own identity. And I think, that journey is different to me per se, where I didn't have the terminology, and spiritually I didn't see any resistance in my identity, my cultural identity, to being queer at the time. So that was my kind of path. For me, I think the identity of being Indian is something that I hadn't questioned a lot as a young child. It's something I just assumed and, just always thought is. And it's only something I've started to question more now. I think the experience of being Indian in Australia has been very interesting for me growing up as a teenager. It's always provided a safe community, a safe place to go to where you can share something that you all have in common. And I think I've certainly felt that through the dance community as well, that there was always this kinship that we shared, and I felt comfortable going back, always knowing that there was this space that I could be in, which is amongst them. And I think it really, for me, is very much an experience of art and culture together because of the dancing. So, learning about all our sort of Hindu traditions and stories through the dancing is just really how I grew up. So it's something I find really hard to question whether I'm Indian or not. It's just too ingrained. With regards to being Indian and queer, I think something I've noticed is that I've benefited to some degree from potentially the naivety in migrant communities towards queer, being queer. We're still in Australia, living in a an Indian community where you can actually live without knowing a single queer person who shares that same cultural identity, potentially, particularly in the sort of more classical music and dance circles. So, yeah, I think there was this sense of naivety that still exists that I kind of grew up around. But I think the idea of being in the closet is a very sort of emotionally aware kind of thing to do. I think a lot of people in our community are driven to be in the closet because of concern for others. And so I don't associate it with negative thoughts at all. I think it's a... it's often a very self-aware, socially conscious practice that, you know, needs to take its own time to change. I've noticed that I've been able to, you know, be queer without having to explain, and also when I explain, not be met with preconceptions, because it's potentially a new concept that then is defined by how I want to express it, not by how the media might have or how the people I'm coming out to in the community might have encountered it, because it is notably absent in the popular culture that they interact with. So the preconceptions are not there, and it's quite liberating, actually. I think in the minds of people that have sort of had to interact with me coming out, often they've sort of drawn a line and said, well, there's Eastern culture and there's Western culture, and being queer falls on the Western side. And so they, because that they've only seen it represented potentially in those forums and that kind of media and Western, you know, movie and whatnot. So they, you know, they're sort of saying, well, it's notably absent from our popular sort of paradigm, so it must come from the West, and therefore being queer is suddenly a questioning of my Indian identity, which I think is something that comes from that sort of from not having much of a life experience of various types of queer people and different people that might have had different journeys.
So I was around 12 years old, and by the time I came out to my parents, I was 22, so it was a good 10 years, yeah. Oh, God. It was a roller coaster. So, you know, initially they would say the things like, you know, you are a son, we're going to love you no matter what. But then the emotions would come in, the drama. Some of it was quite hurtful as well. I remember my father saying, this can't be so, you know, I'd rather be dead, or I'd probably kill myself if my son's gay. My mother was like, you will be the death of us. So there were really dramatic moments as well. But at the same time, they were trying to be understanding. They were coming to terms with something new that they haven't been exposed to before that as well. And it was a mixed bag, like it was a mixed bag of emotions, and it's still continuing. Like at this stage, they aren't, let's say, they know about it. They may have accepted it, but it's almost something that's not spoken about for now.
Do you know other people who, like, happen to be also Indian Australian or other Asian Australians who have experienced like similar difficulties in getting their parents to accept who they are?
Definitely, there've been like a fair few of my friends who have come across similar circumstances, but also some more extreme circumstances as well. So, one of my friends recently, he didn't come out, but he was outed, yeah. And he was kicked out of home. So he was living at home, and he's been kicked out of home. So, yeah, that's quite unfortunate, but it's a reality.
Does that come back to the fact that in Indian families, there's very little conversation about sex and sexuality? It's usually a taboo topic that's not discussed, or you know, it's not handled.
Yeah, definitely. I think I can't even think of any examples of when sexuality has come up just in the household growing up and being confronted with it or forced to even have a conversation about it with parents. It was, even if it did surface in some sort of TV show or something that you would watch, it was almost ignored or just a blind eye was kept to it, yeah. And even sex, the first time I guess we kind of were exposed to it as a family, it was when we got that letter from our school saying, yes, this week we will be focusing on sex ed. And that was the first time that prompted my parents to be like, okay, let's acknowledge sex and then go from there. But that was also left to the schools to talk about, and it wasn't really talked about at home. And only after, in my home, I guess after we were 17 or 18, that's when it was brought up a few times, but never really.
Dad and my sister are, they've always been very accepting. My mum, when I came out as bisexual, she thought I was going through some strange uni stage and that I would grow out of it. She wasn't happy about it, but she, you know, thought it was just a phase, so thought I'd get over it. And then when I had this relationship, that was when I guess she needed to kind of deal with the reality that her daughter fucks women. and so, yeah, she was very homophobic. Yeah, and that was very difficult for me because, yeah, like I guess in our culture, family is really central. Like we're not, I don't know, like I didn't, like our culture is less sort of individualistic than I guess Western culture is. And it's like, family is like the relationships, you know, family is above all other kind of relationships and they have priority over other relationships. And to have that, yeah, so that was very confronting for me to deal with and having to choose between, you know, two people whom I love dearly, like my girlfriend and my mom, that was really difficult. And over time, like mum was really awful, like she was really awful, but over time she somehow came to accept my partner because she was able to see that, oh okay, she's freaking awesome. But also she could see how happy she made me, and also the various enormous ways in which she would support me and look after me. And so my mum came to, you know, respect and become quite fond of my partner. And was actually quite upset when we broke up. So that was really nice to have, you know, eventually that kind of closure in my, in that grief, because that was a really awful thing to be dealing with. I found it really hard. I did my Arangetum in Mohiniyattam. That's my debut solo full-length recital that's a traditional part of, I guess, being a Mohiniyattam dancer. And I did that in 2010. And during my speech, in which I, you know, I thank people and whatever, I acknowledged my partner. And that was like, so I essentially came out at my Arangetum in front of how many people? I think there were 3,000 people there. Yeah, so my community, like my Fijian community, my relatives, the classical Indian music and dance scene, my dance school, everyone. If I didn't already know, then they knew now. And that was my mum suspected I was going to be doing that, and we had a massive fight about it like 2 nights prior to my Arangetum, which was quite distressing. But she, later apologised, which was nice. But yeah, like having that coming out of my Arangetum is something I'm quite proud of doing. Like, I think that took a lot of strength, and it was a huge risk because I didn't know what the consequences of that would be. Like, would I be, exiled from my various communities? Would I still be welcome at these places, at my dance school? I wasn't sure. But, and I think there was quite a lot of gossiping amongst my community, my Fiji Indian community and my family.
And I think that's something that a lot of South Asians have to deal with. You know, it's not just, it might not be rejection, it's more the sort of speculation, the gossip, you know, the judgment.
Yeah, everyone's in everyone's business. Yeah.
And I think that's the scary part, isn't it, the gossip?
Yeah.
So what was the reaction like when you did come out?
Well, all my queer friends were crying. a lot of people, you know, afterwards were telling me, like, how, you know, powerful that was for them to hear. And I think they understood what the risk was that I was taking and what they meant and what that meant. So that was really nice.
Family has always been really important for me growing up, and I come from a very close family. We're a very nuclear family because we migrated as a small unit. So there's just, you know, my parents, my sister and I, and most of our extended relatives are far away. So that, I think, really influenced how close we are today. And, you know, if I also sort of assess how we run our family, like the governance of our family, it's very left-wing. Not to say that that's the ideology we have, but I'm saying sort of the way we govern it. If my parents were political leaders, the way they seem to think of family possessions and things are very, all very communal and very, you know. So I think that's influenced my idea of family. I think it's a very communal place. I think it doesn't have a lot of room for individuality. I'm fine with that. In the family context, I think of it as one creature. All of that. So I think that still persists, and I sort of see that for my family going forward, whatever that shape that might take. And I also think that the strength that my cultural background seems to have placed on family values has almost overridden any concern for sexuality or being queer. And once that initial kind of tension is overcome and that naivety is broken down and the discovery has happened, I've noticed that most people I talk to who were, in my mind, otherwise quite traditional or not potentially engaging or accepting have really come around and discovered that, my being queer has nothing to do with my inability to have family values. And that if I sort of boil it down, they seem to have recognized that, it's what they more value is the idea that you have relationships and that you share love and that you build families. and then that's more important than who it's with. And it's been wonderful seeing my parents come to that point, and a lot of our friends as well. For Indian people who identify, I shouldn't say Indian, but I mean, because every subcultures are so different, but at least in my case, there were two coming out episodes, and I think this is because of the distance between the relatives. So the first episode is letting your parents know, and then understanding between yourselves that that exists. But then there's almost a presumption that no one else will know and that this will be a secret that then needs to be broken later. So it's a second episode of coming out where you have got to say, oh, by the way, it's not just you that know. Everyone else does too. And then, you know, I think that gap can only exist because we live so far away from family. I think those two events will be more synchronous if we lived in India, around grandparents, around, you know, uncles, aunties, cousins. It would be harder to segregate the information from those people.
Bạn đang nghe tới.
Áp sùn rồi hề.
Nǐ zài tīng.
Al an tasmǎuna ila.
You're listening to
We Weren't Born Yesterday.
Exploring queer heritage.
A project by the Queering the Air Collective
at 3CR Community Radio.
You're listening to the Indian episode of We Weren't Born Yesterday, and we're speaking to seven queer-identifying Indian migrants and Australians of Indian origin in Victoria.
Even within the gay community, there's a lot of resistance, or not resistance, maybe a lot of hesitance to interact with people who are not perceived as being mainstream.
Does that translate to racism as well? Or
well, I had this conversation the other day. I don't really think it is consciously something. I think racism is a very strong term. I think a lot of it is to do with just hesitance, or just not knowing. I think a lot of people, because of not being exposed to a lot of people from other places, I think people struggle to understand how they should interact and what they should say. Maybe that person doesn't understand my jokes, or maybe doesn't get the, you know, the mundane everyday conversation. Do I have to be different for that person? Do I have to change the tone, or do I have to speak? I think a lot of people don't really want to do that. I think it's a big effort for them. So I think people, I'm not generalizing. I'm probably generalizing, but there are a lot of people who don't do it, but I'm saying a lot of them do too. I think it's easy to just stay in the mainstream rather than make so much effort to include somebody else. A lot of people would ask, what do we really assimilate into? You know, what is really Australian culture? Because what people know as Australian culture now was not 30 years ago. I think before the Italians came, there was no pasta. And, you know, before the Vietnamese came, there were no noodle soups. So, but you know, now you find a lot of, you know, pasta and pizza has become kind of a staple. So, you know, I think the whole idea of assimilation is a very, very vague thing, especially in this country, because it's quite a young country. And I think people should understand that the whole idea of Australian identity is also going to constantly evolve and change. And people must be willing to accept that it's going to change and move with it. There is a skeleton, you know, there are laws and there are rules. And of course, one must conform to that and follow that. But when it comes to society and everyday life, it's quite hard to really know what to assimilate into. What do you do? What do you do when you come from a culture that is completely different? I think if you skim on the surface and just prefer to be superficial and just stay on the surface, I think it's easy. Life in general is easy. But when you know more things and when you dig deeper and understand more things about life and the earth and people and the world, I think it gets harder because you know more things. No, dating has not been easy. only because I feel people are afraid of other people who are opinionated. And
you're an opinionated person.
But I like to think I... But I think people, there is a stereotype, you know, an Indian gay boy is meant to be submissive and quiet and accepting and, not questioning or challenging the, you know, the mainstream gay general culture. So when somebody is like that, I think people just step back and they don't expect me to be that way. Mm. And I think that puts people off. Well, that's the way it is.
जब हम छोटे बच्चे थे हम स्कूल जाते थे मुझे लगता है गे कोई अचानक एक दिन नहीं बनता लेकिन यू ऑलवेज हैव दोज वन और टू किड्स जो यू नो स्कूल में अकेले से रहते हैं जिनके ज़्यादा दोस्त नहीं होते ऐसे नहीं कि वो दोस्त बना नहीं सकते लेकिन वो बुली हो जाते हैं या शायद उनकी आदतें थोड़ी यू नो लड़कों के हिसाब से बेसिकली अगर लड़कियां लड़कों की तरह बिहेव करें तो आई थिंक वो थोड़ा एक्सेप्टेबल हो जाता है क्योंकि वो थोड़ी टफ सी हो जाती है उनके लड़के तो दोस्त बन जाते हैं शायद एक तो अगर लड़के लड़कियों की तरह थोड़ा बहुत भी बिहेव करे या आवाज़ उनकी वैसी हो तो आई थिंक उनकी चाइल्डहुड बहुत ही मुश्किल हो जाती है ख़ास करके इंडिया में क्योंकि इंडिया में एक आयरन कर्टन है यू नो लड़कियाँ ऐसे बड़ी होती है लड़के ऐसे बड़े होते हैं लड़कियाँ ये खेलती है लड़के ये खेलते हैं लड़कियाँ और लड़के कभी दोस्त नहीं बन सकते बेटा तुम कल घर आए किसके साथ चल रहे थे ये मुझे पड़ोसी के यू नो पप्पू क्यों बता रहे हैं और घर भी इट्स मेल डोमिनेटेड सोसाइटी बेटा तुम ऐसे नहीं कर सकते बेटा तुम ही मेरे यू नो सपनों के राजकुमार हो नहीं वो ज़रा ज़्यादा हो गया लेकिन यू नो मेरे बूढ़े कंधों का सहारा तुम ही बनोगे एंड ऑल दैट आई हैव गे फ्रेंड्स हु स्टिल लिव इन इंडिया एंड वन बाय वन दे आर गेटिंग मैरिड आई मीन आई डोंट नो इफ दैट्स अ गुड थिंग और नॉट एक बार ट्राई तो करो क्या बुरा होगा एंड स्टफ लाइक दैट एंड मे बी चिल्ड्रन डू दैट बिकॉज यू नो वॉट वी आर सोशल आफ्टर ऑल If everyone's telling me that, you know what, eat this, I'm going to eat it. Because, you know, you probably, it is a society where there are arranged marriages and stuff like that. More than 80%, I don't know the stats, but I don't know how many percent, there's a large percentage of arranged marriages in India. If there is no such, you know, affection, or there's no such right background for that, you know, relationship to take place. How are you forcing that just because, you know, naturally male and female are meant to be together?
The thing is, culture is ever changing. I think what is Indian culture now was not a century ago. And people are constantly redefining and reintroducing new things into culture. And probably 150 years down the line, Indian culture might be something completely different to what we know it today.
I would say, and I will actually, I believe so, that India is far more out there than what I've experienced or what I continue to experience. So, you know, while I say that Australia is far more liberal on the outside, but on the inside, it's very, very conservative. It is exactly the opposite in India. On the outside, it is conservative, but on the inside, it is a party. It's like a big New Year's ball happening every day. And that's what is, you know, it's it's different. So I've experienced both the spectrums, or rather I'm experiencing the other part of the spectrum now. Interesting. See, while I say India is going to is going through a tremendous overhaul from every possible aspect that you may think of, you know, right from an economy wise to a simple mindset to culture. Everyone wants to keep the culture. Everyone loves their heritage and their traditions, more so gay men. Economically, while the pink dollar is not very out and about in India, but it's there. It's definitely there. The mindset of people has evolved tremendously, tremendously. Because, like I said, today you could be an out, you could be a person who's out, and you'd have absolutely no one raising a question. If you're somebody from the government, you will, simply because you're from the government. But on a regular day, you have no problem. Because now every city or every state at least has their own, you know, gay prides and things like that. There are bodies, definitely, who are politically influenced, who would create issues and who would, you know, have, as they call it in Hindi, morchas, which is basically, you know, it's like a walk. And they're trying, so that'll be done just to spite and to create, you know, turmoil within the society. That's there. But I think the mindset of an Indian man, woman, child has evolved tremendously. People have become far, far, far more tolerant. And not just tolerant, but welcoming. They're embracing gay people. But, like I said, on the inside, that's one side. The other side is, I wish gay men came out into the open and stood up for themselves. That would stop a lot of marriages and would stop a lot of unnecessary turmoil, not just in their lives, but in the life of the girl that they would get married and the families associated with that.
And that's a problem, isn't it?
That is a huge problem.
Gay men are forced to marry.
Yeah. There is an emotional blackmail from parents. There is an emotional blackmail from the society. There is pressure from the society. There is pressure from family. And I completely understand for the ones who fall prey to it. And I'm saying fall prey to it because I've had the same, and I've been able to stand up and say, no, I'm not interested in getting married. And I know people who continue, who say that, but I know people who fall prey for it. And, but I just wish them luck. I wish them all the best. There's nothing more you can say or do, you know, and hope that they, you know, they stick to a decision that they have made. Because for me, marriage is sacred. And I think it's really important that you stay honest and truthful to your partner. And I hope that that happens. Whilst the back of my head says, I know that's not going to happen.
I don't know. This is more true of people, migrants from India who've come here. Mm. There's a lot of pressure from their families to get married. And marriage is a very important social sort of obligation. Yeah. That every son and daughter is expected to fulfill.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, there's constant pressure from the family and from society, you know, which includes relatives, friends, to get married at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true of Indian Australians as well? Like, is there pressure to get married? And how does a gay partnership or gay relationship sort of fit in with that, or does it contradict that?
I can only speak from my perspective, but in my household, growing up, there was, you know, you would follow that social norm. You will get married, you will have children, and it was an expectation, a requirement, and you know, it still is, especially for my younger brother who is straight, and it's what's expected. I guess it's not your your stereotypical arranged marriage scenario that you that people often associate with, but it is almost a requirement or assume that you will get married, you will settle down, you will have children in due time. As a gay man, it does some of the concerns that my parents were facing with when they were trying to accept my sexuality. Often it wasn't even, they weren't even thinking about themselves. It wasn't, they were accepting, but they were concerned about what will the society think or the community. I should mention that my parents are quite involved in the Indian community in Melbourne, so they know a fair few contacts. And I am known as, you know, this person's son by a lot of people around in Melbourne as well. And yeah, that did affect how they came to terms with my sexuality.
Is there still pressure on you to get married or, for example, to find... I don't know, how does it work out? Do they expect you to still find a girlfriend for yourself? Or have they reconciled themselves to the idea that your partner would be a man?
I think at the moment it's not spoken about. It's just not acknowledged at all. But that being said, my mother, I'm sure she's aware of what's going on in my life. So I do have a partner, and we're in the stages of transitioning to trying to incorporate him into like my life. So getting him involved, becoming familiar with my family, because I would like that. I would like to have him involved with my family as much as I am with his. So we are in that process of thinking about how do we transition to that next step of getting him involved, moving in together, and seeing where it goes.
Like, my mom, like, really wants... I don't know, she really wanted me to get married to a man and have babies and whatever, and she, you know, really wanted to be a grandmother, and I think she's went through this kind of grieving process that wasn't going to happen, because I do not want kids. And I think maybe that's me being queer, maybe that's, that might have been the hardest thing for her, to kind of acknowledge that maybe I wasn't going to get married and have kids and do those things that Indian, well, like, that we're meant to do in order to be family, because, you know, family is so important. And so maybe there was this belief that, you know, because I'm queer, therefore I'm not going to have family. I'm not going to have this, you know, really important set of relationships that's valued so much. And she wouldn't be a grandmother. So I think that was difficult for her. But, yeah, I feel like she's kind of resolved that in herself. And after my relationship broke up, she had this conversation with me where she was like, she was telling me like how sad she was by the idea that maybe I wouldn't, you know, have my, my life partner. Like, maybe I wouldn't find a life partner. And she was like, you know, it's actually okay, because, you know, like, look at this uncle, he's single and he lives a very happy life. You don't need to get married and have a family to be happy. And for me, like, hearing that was really nice, that that she could kind of acknowledge that. I don't know how many Indian mothers would, like, you know, like,
acknowledge that.
Yeah. It's like, yay, my daughter's going to be a spinster.
It's very hard also to sort of express to them, you know, the fact that you might not want that for yourself.
Yeah.
To negotiate that.
Yeah. So I'm really, like, proud of my mom, and for having journeyed so far from being quite homophobic to being acknowledged, like, you know, very welcoming of who I am and how I might be in the future, and the lack of the possible lack of family for her in that sense.
Tanha के साए तेरे होंठों के सरा दश्ते तन्हा
I don't even know how to explain it, really.
Yeah.
It is not a question of norms anymore. Mm. It's just a question of perceptions, like how people perceive other people as opposed to what fits what mold.
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
In a sense, being a migrant and having the freedom to refashion your identity in a way, and also the necessity of that task of refashioning your identity, enables a lot of people to change their perceptions of what their family members can or cannot do, what kind of lives they can or cannot lead, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think the experience of our parents as migrants translates to their experience as parents of queers because, you know, they've been able to abandon a thought or an idea or a place or an attachment and reattach to something new in the process of migration. And that is such a big part of their life story that when they're met with needing to abandoning a previous concept they have about their child and adopting a new one, or saying, well, here is the new concept and I need to make the most of it, much like they did when they came to Australia. I see the parallel in their behaviour of that generation being able to do that. So I think, you know, the message of positivity for queer youth that are cultural is that, you know, have a lot of faith in the power of the migratory experience that your parents had. And, you know, we can reflect that experience into how they start to accept your identity or queer identity because they're possible, they're powerful individuals.
अगर आप अपने आप को एक्सेप्ट नहीं करेंगे तो कोई भी आपको एक्सेप्ट नहीं करेगा। अगर आप दुनिया से डरेंगे तो दुनिया आपको डराएगी। अगर आप दुनिया से नहीं डरेंगे तो यू विल बी सरप्राइज कि दुनिया आपसे डरने लगेगी। मैंने देखा, जिस दिन मैंने अपने आप को एक्सेप्ट कर लिया उस दिन के बाद मुझे आज तक कभी भी डर नहीं लगा कि मैं गे किसी को कहूँ कि नहीं कहूँ। मैं आई कैन से इट वेरी ओपनली, मेरे लिए ऐसा इशू ही नहीं है। मैं अपने को ये सोचता ही नहीं हूँ कि मैं गे हूँ। मैंने कभी सोचा ही नहीं कि मैं गे हूँ, क्योंकि दिस इज व्हाट आई एम। मैं शुरू से ही ऐसा हूँ, तो मुझे कुछ और पता ही नहीं है, तो मैं अपने को कैसे कहूँ कि मैं अलग हूँ दूसरे लोगों से। तो मुझे जो छोटे हैं, जो स्ट्रगल कर रहे हैं, उनको पहले अपने आप को एक्सेप्ट करना पड़ेगा। जब उन्होंने अपने आप को एक्सेप्ट कर लिया, अगर वो अपने घर वालों को इतनी हिम्मत हो कि अपने घर वालों को बता पाएं, तो दैट विल बी द बिगेस्ट थिंग दे विल एवर डू इन देयर लाइफ। उसमें उनको फिर ये भी प्लान होना चाहिए कि दो आंसर हो सकते हैं। एक तो घर वाले एक्सेप्ट कर लेंगे तुम्हें, अगर तो एक्सेप्ट कर लेंगे देन योर होल लाइफ विल चेंज। अगर वो एक्सेप्ट नहीं करेंगे तो थोड़ी देर के लिए आपको प्रिपेयर होना पड़ेगा कि इट थोड़ा सा हार्ड टाइम हो सकता है। फ्रेंड्स आर देयर बट फ्रेंड्स दे डोंट डू एवरीथिंग फॉर यू। एट द एंड तुमको अपने आप ही करना होता है जिंदगी में जो कुछ करना होता है। पार्टनर्स भी कुछ नहीं कर सकते, कोई भी कुछ नहीं कर सकता। जो तुमको अचीव करना है लाइफ में तुम अपने आप करते हो। सो इट्स ऑल अप हियर इन योर माइंड। जो थोड़े कन्फ्यूज से हैं जैसे आप बोल रहे हैं, If you go towards a little bit spirituality, they can get stronger. They can feel stronger. Being depressed, it doesn't solve anything. Then you apne upar pity feel kar rahe ho. I don't want you to feel pity on you. This is who you are. Think of you as a soul. You will find the answers for a lot of things. You will not care. So soul has got no gender. Because kal ko jab meri death ho jayegi, to my body, then they won't say Sam ki body padi hai. Then they'll say the body. Humko jo naam diye gaye is just like table, computer, Arjun. Humko kuch naam dene hai har cheez ko. Aise naam diya hua hai hum logon ko. Koi tumhari atma ko koi naam nahi de sakta. Atma isliye bolte hain ki wo koi uska naam nahi hai, koi uska shape nahi, koi uska form nahi hai. To itni sari atmaye ghoom rahi hai jo duniya mein. To that is the real thing. What is the energy? It's a metaphysical, you know, thing which is sitting there, who is like a driver driving the vehicle. The day I die, I go. Go into spirituality a little bit. I found dancing as the medium, but somebody could just pick up a book and look for those answers. If you're spiritual, you will see whenever you think of God or something, higher being, whenever people go there, they always close their eye. Automatically it happens. And by doing that, they're actually looking into their atma. Agar aap spirituality mein thoda sa jaye, ya kisi ko, agar aapko khud nahi samajh aa raha, kyunki itna seedha nahi hai, simple sa nahi ekdam se. Sare answer nahi milte. Bhagwan hai ki nahi hai, what is God and who am I? Am I Sam? All those things, agar tum thoda thoda bhi padh lo, so you will see, you will get a bit more clarity in your head. Jab aap waise karenge, to it will make you stronger mentally. You will be surprised how little our parents know. I can tell you that now. I teach some of these things to my parents because of my dancing. In India, we keep doing all these rituals, going to temples, gurdwaras, and this and that. Half the things, if you ask your parents, they would have no clue why they're doing it. If you tell them this is what society is telling you, you're doing it, and the society is telling you for me to get married, that's why you're telling me. You don't want it. You don't want to see me unhappy. But you're doing it because your society is expecting that from you. If you make them think, if you could take them mentally there, they'll accept you. But you have to be at that level to take them there. If they see you are unsure of things, that's when they think you should follow. This is a benchmark. Because you don't know where you're going. And they are actually scared that you're going to be left alone. They're scared for you. It's just because they are scared of themselves being alone. Your dad will never see himself alone without your mom. You know how they will feel weird. And it's going to happen one day. Either your mom is going to go first or your dad. And then they would be very, it will be hard for them to deal with it because they haven't gone there mentally. They're always hanging on to something. And that's what they want you to do, to have a life partner. Have a life partner up till what point? Then the partner would be left behind. So if you prepare now, it's much easier later.
Could you say the Indian community in Melbourne is socially conservative?
Yes. However, I think it is changing. And I have come out to... I'm not out to a lot of my family friends who are of my parents' generation. However, a lot of the younger generation who are in the same age demographic as me, they have all been more than supportive and understanding. So I believe, I think things are changing. And I'm out to my cousins, but not to my aunties and uncles, yeah. But everyone has been supportive that I've come out to.
So what's the biggest challenge right now for you?
Yeah, so the biggest challenge for me at this stage is to... So I'm in a relationship, but to normalize my gay relationship into just any other relationship, you know, it's... for it to be the same as, for example, my youngest straight brother and his partner, for it to be the same, same thing, normalizing it for my parents and the community, I guess.
I think there is a lot of negative discourse about the struggles and difficulties about with coming out in migrant contexts and cultural contexts, which I agree with. I think it's tough, and we need to acknowledge that. But I think we have a lot more space for positive dialogue about how enabled we are and how empowered our culture is and generation is. So I think it's just for me that I think to remember that there is a lot that is possible, and that you know, we're probably very lucky to have, you know, the wealth of perspectives that we do when we have cross identity or multiple identities. So yeah, I think there's a lot of positive messaging in that you know, I believe in.
You've been listening to the Indian episode of We Weren't Born Yesterday, and you've heard from 7 queer-identifying Indians and Australians of Indian origin in Australia. This is the last episode of the 4-part series We Weren't Born Yesterday. This series was produced by the Queering the Air Collective at 3CR and was funded by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. A big thank you to the amazing Queering the Air Collective for making this happen, to the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their support, to 3CR Community Radio Melbourne for hosting us, and to Elena McMaster of 3CR for all her support. Thank you for listening and for staying with us through this series. We're going to leave you with a beautiful song from the 1960 Hindi film Mughal-e-Azam called Jab Pyar Kiya Toh Darna Kya, which translates as When You're in Love, Why Fear? Yeah.
Thank you for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.